Hey, 4Play listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
It's Joel Damon Day. We've got the four-man scramble against Joel at his home club, Mesa. Oh, God. Here in Arizona.
Wow. That was
I am not. I am not laughing. I'm not.
It's coming for you guys.
I mean, listen, this... Riggs has COVID, so and we were all just around each other, and we're all just gonna we're gonna get through this, and we were just talking about it. We don't know for sure. He's gonna get tested later, but I mean, you just heard in that little fucking monologue there, he can barely speak. You actually did very well in the Joel interview. You didn't really. You're utilizing the mute button, I bet.
Dude, I was utilizing the mute button, the cough button. I think I said this during the Joel thing, but for those of you out there that are on the Whoop train, I got 9 hours and 11 minutes of sleep last night. 100% sleep, all green. My recovery is 28%, all in the red. And I feel fucking horrible. Just
a little nerve-wracking, too, that your respiratory rate didn't go up. It actually went shot down, or your HRV went up, I think.
Yeah, I was confused. Isn't it supposed to be the opposite?
Your respiratory rate is supposed to shoot up like super high because your heart's working extra time. Your lungs are fucking moving in and out and they're fucking cranking.
Yeah, I had it wrong before, but I saw those and those were maybe promising. I don't know. I haven't gotten tested yet. We're recording this on Wednesday and I'm going to try to sleep. But Tuesday morning I woke up and I just felt pretty terrible. Taste and smell is totally fine. Which seems to be the main indicator. A friend who I got beers with on Friday tested positive for COVID and texted me that yesterday. So here I am feeling bad. Don't feel good. Feel a little sick. Got a few symptoms. And then I get that text. I thought maybe I could sleep it off. Maybe I'm dehydrated. I've been pounding water. Went to bed super early last night. Missed the whole gold medal game. Went to bed super early. Woke up sweating. And at 28% recovery with 9 hours and 11 minutes of sleep. So I don't think that's good.
Yeah, and we were just saying before we hopped on the podcast here that me and Frankie and everybody who you were with, because we were with each other this weekend filming videos and doing a podcast, there's just dark clouds off in the distance. And I'm just really wondering what my next couple of days are going
to
look like.
I'm hoping that maybe I'm just immune or immortal to the point where, because I've been around COVID. It was in my house. And knock on wood, thankfully, and I quarantined during that time. Everyone got through it and is past it. But I just have avoided it. I've gotten tested, I don't know, 10 times throughout this whole thing. And I just, hopefully now, I can't get it. I don't know if it's blood type thing. But Riggs, the thoughts and prayers are with you. It's no fucking joke, man. Like, you got to take your time now and you got to actually take it seriously.
So I appreciate that. Thank you. We have Joel Damon on the show. We just spoke to him for over an hour. And then tonight, I think 8 p.m., we are putting out the Joel Damon scramble video on YouTube. He's going to be in the chat if you can figure out the technology. And so, yeah, this show is pretty much going to be a full Joel Damon episode. Mostly, he just texted me. He's like, which is very friendly. He just texted me. He goes, do you have vitamin C, vitamin D, zinc? So he's clearly worried about helping me out and the things that I need to get. So I'm going to go try to acquire some key
zinc and vitamin D and these little emergency packets.
Those are the hangover ones.
Yeah. It's just emergency. It's got 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C. Throw it in your water. You drink one like in the afternoon. It gives you some energy too. And vitamin D, a lot of people with COVID are not getting enough vitamin D. I don't know if it's a combination of it drains you and then also you're staying inside for most of the time. So you're not getting the sun. You're not experiencing what life is supposed to give you. So it makes you more tired, not having vitamin D. And then zinc apparently is like, you need zinc with COVID. So yeah. Okay. Joel Damon was awesome. I don't know how anyone's going to listen to the show and watch this video tonight and have him not be one of their favorite golfers. I think he is more common man than really you can ever imagine a professional athlete being. You're going to hear stories about him taking clubs off the rack and just using them on the PGA Tour. The fact that he's going to come in the chat most likely on the YouTube page is awesome. For everyone watching, that'll just be like, you'll be able to just like talk to Joel on our YouTube page. That'll be really cool. And yeah, he's got great stories and just a really cool dude. A guy we always say this at Barstool, like I could grab a beer with him or something. Like that's like the barometer. Like Joel Damon's the kind of guy you definitely want to grab a beer with.
He's just another one of our guys now. Like Kisner's our guy, been our guy for a while now. Guys who are just super normal, but also happen to be incredibly good at the game of golf. I think Riggs said that Joel is number 64 in the world, which is incredibly impressive, but he's a super normal dude, which you'll see in the interview you're going to listen to here in a little bit and in the video that we're putting out on YouTube.
Kiz is incredibly common, man, but he's also like top 25 golfer at times. Like, and I don't know if that's just because he has the success. Like Kiz, he gets locked in, I feel like, or whatever. Like, I don't know. Like, even when we did the four-man scramble, Kiz, like, had Dewey with him, and he was, like, fucking, he wanted to beat us. Like, he still got that competitive killer instinct. Like, he's a fucking top 25 golfer. Joel is still on that top 100, 64 of all time. But he, like, you think that he jumped a rope, and he no one knows who he is. Like, he's, like, this errant, just crazy person that just drinks Trulies and is just like happens to be good at golf, and no one said anything. Like, who is this guy? Like, he is so common, man. It hurts. It's great. It's absolutely crazy that he's gotten to where he's gotten with his mentality and his like everything about it. Like, you'll watch in the video tonight. He's just a fucking regular dude. In the video, we thought that he was his twin brother. We didn't think it was him. We're like, imagine saying,
like David or something. David.
Yeah. We're like, at some point, he's just going to be like, by the way, I'm not Joel. I'm his twin brother. Because we couldn't believe that guy that we were playing is 64th all time, 64th in the world at golf. That cool.
You'll hear it. And I don't want to spoil too much of the interview, but Rick starts off the interview being like, you're the 64th player in the world. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It is. But he says it. He's like, regular dude.
He's like, thanks, I guess. Maybe. I don't really know. So yeah, Joel's up. We're going to pretty much do the whole show with him. The Century Tournament of Champions, plus I think everyone that made it to Eastlake last year is going on this week. Excited to watch it. Kapalua. Kapalua is on like probably my top 5 or 10 bucket list courses I want to play. Court Crenshaw, stunning, in Maui on the cliffs overlooking the ocean. And then, you know, you get pretty damn good golf because you get stars. You get Bryson's obviously out there, DJ's out there, JT's out there, a bunch of stars are playing. So it's a nice little way to ease into the golf season is this tournament. It's like this every year. And like I said, it's a really cool golf course. They usually go pretty damn low. And they got that 18th hole with the, you know, it's like 600 yards, but it's super downhill. They hit drives like 400 yards and then they rip these draws into that green. It's just really fun to watch. And again, it's a ease into the golf season. So I know we said we're going to do predictions, but I might die, so I need to get off the show. And we did a full hour with Joel Damon. So enjoy the interview.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
No, I'm excited to watch Kapalua, like you said. JT's the reigning champion there. Dustin Johnson's the favorite going in. It'll be fun. I mean, will Bryson hit like a 600-yard drive? I feel like that's going to be fun to watch. Like, how far can he possibly go? That video came out of him teaching, was it Hughes or someone? How to just like swing harder, and how cocky and condescending the way he was speaking, being like, no, it's really just reaching up and bringing it in and firing. He was doing all these weird things. Like, dude, it's not that easy to swing 100 and I mean, to get 200 and whatever ball speed, whatever they were trying to achieve, 195, whatever. Crazy, crazy, crazy to watch him play. Those are moon balls over there. So it'll be fun to watch. Yeah, I got really nothing else. We're going to be streaming, I guess. I think we're going to try and stream a little bit right before the video tonight on YouTube. So just go on our YouTube page and subscribe. I want to get an update. I think only a couple hundred people, if that, listen to my call to action to go fucking subscribe to our YouTube page. It's that simple. Just like go do it. I don't want to start getting angry, but like I fucking got sent to that fucking seat on that plane. You can go. I'm still thinking about that. 98.4. We got 200 subscribers from that call to action. Can't we
maybe they're already all subscribed.
Maybe they are. I mean, no. Then we would have so many goddamn subscribers. There's people that are being lazy. I've seen the numbers. I know who's listening to this, and I know who subscribed. There's a lot of you out there that just won't go do it. It's a couple clicks with your thumb. You're scrolling there. You're looking at nude photos, and you're fucking going all crazy on the websites. Like, just go click on that. Go look at us for a second.
Okay, I agree. Go subscribe. Go subscribe to our YouTube page. A quick thing I wanted to note is that Patrick Reed no longer with Nike, and he was rocking G4 stuff. And I saw a lot of people on the internet freaking out about it. You know, we're big G4 guys. We love their shoes. We love their gear. G4 has been with us for years now. And the Gallivanters are literally the best golf shoe ever made by far. And I know for a fact that Patrick Reed does not have a deal with G4, that he bought the gear himself and is just rocking the G4 gear. So again, I saw a bunch of people like freaking out, jumping to conclusions. Shout out to Office Space, jumping to conclusions, Matt. But
I saw a bunch of people
freaking out about that. Patrick Reed, who is, by the way, the 11th ranked player in the world, so like, and a major champion. So I would say it's very much a great endorsement for G4 that Patrick Reed, who clearly has ended his situation with Nike, like bought G4 gear to rock himself and is rocking it at Kapalua this week. So a little Riggsy scoops on that front right there. But yeah, Kapalua, I'm excited. The course is really cool. You see some crazy shots and somebody gets a chance to start the year off with a W. So it'll be fun to watch. Okay. Joel Damon's up next. We did like a full hour. It's very casual. We just kind of shoot the shit with him. I think you'll enjoy it. So here's the interview with Joel Damon.
How we doing,
fellas? It's a nice little wall.
Yeah. What's going on with your little wall there?
I designed it. I think they're old windows, maybe thingies.
Looks like windows from a church.
Yeah. I think we just take out the plain glass or whatever you call that.
Cool.
Wow, very classic.
Kingdom of Joel.
Yeah, this is your little kingdom.
Are you guys doing?
We're just gonna hop right in. We're doing great. Well, I'm not. I think I have COVID, so I don't think it's great at all.
Like actually.
Yeah. I got 9 hours. So on Whoop, you know, I track my Whoop all the time. I got 9 hours of sleep last night, and I'm at 28% recovery.
Well, it's more about your heart rate, like the HVR.
Yeah, that's not good either.
Okay, fair. Well, good thing you didn't come over for New Year's.
No, I didn't. Thank God. Anyways, I was looking. You're the 64th ranked player in the world. We did beat you, but. That's pretty high. I didn't know you were going to be that high. Actually, I was impressed by that.
Thanks. I think.
I mean, yeah, I didn't know where to go with that either.
Didn't you beat up on Kisner, who's like top 30 in the world? So
yeah, I think he's like 25th. So yeah, I don't know. I was a little. If you're right, if we beat Kisner, who's 25th, we should in theory be able to beat the 64th ranked player in the world. But I do. In looking at the match, people are going to be able to see this on Thursday. I think Thursday night we're putting it out. But
a little podcasting thing tonight then.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's 8 o'clock tonight. Is that when we're putting the match out?
Yeah, because Joel, this is how this works. We speak today, but the podcast comes out tomorrow. So we speak as though it's tomorrow. It's a mind fuck.
Frankie cannot wrap his head around that.
No, what a guy to explain.
All right. Well, just I'll just go a day ahead. I mean,
it's that easy.
Yeah, Wednesday never existed. Tomorrow.
Okay.
Joel, are you surprised you're the 64th best player in the world?
I mean, if you think about it, absolutely. Like, I'm just a good Washington. Like, what the hell am I doing being good at golf? I don't know, that good, I guess. Yeah, it's – I mean, if you think about it, if you're top 100 in anything in the world, that's really good.
It's crazy.
It's incredible.
How many people, like – you think of all like the weekend hackers, right? And you think of everybody at the club that you hang out with all the time. It's really weird to think that, but at the same time, I know that it's not my full potential either. So, I want to be consistently top 50 in the world and, you know, crack that top 30. And I think that would be, I think I could hang out in the top 30 for a while would be my goal.
It is. Like, think about how many millions of people play golf and look at instructional stuff and go to the range and grind, and you're the 64th best out of, like, tens of millions of people. That's insane.
Are you guys just pumping me up right now to actually pump you guys up because you guys beat me so?
That's correct.
Exactly. I was actually thinking about that, though, with like Jin and Trent, and I were talking about this the other day. Everybody inputs their handicap. Jin does such a bad job of just like kind of like telling you where you sit amongst others. I think it'd be so sweet if they put like the top 1,000 players in Jersey and you could, I could find myself in the state of New Jersey and compete against others. Cause obviously like the four of us are never going to be in the top 100 of anything in our lives in this world. We're top 100 podcast. That sounds good.
I hope so. Like, God, I hope so. Yeah. In terms of golf podcasts.
But yeah, I think they should do a better job of like sharing that information because it would be cool to look at and like just compete against, you know, if I'm competing against like to be in the top 25,000, that'd be sweet.
Would you want it to be a point system, Lurch? Or like, cause like, what if you play 1,000 times and I play twice, but I shoot like I have just a lower average or whatever, right? Like, you, like how,
yeah.
Things of you could have like a weekly game, you could have like a monthly thing to see like how much you've improved in a month or how much you've improved in a year. I think you could do a lot of different things with that. It would make it more competitive or more fun. I mean, you could. I think it's a pretty solid idea.
Lurch, do you think you're in the top 1,000 golfers in New Jersey?
Top 1,000? No.
Yeah.
Man, didn't you just shoot career low, 71?
Yeah. But that's it's not going to crack it.
If it's not three putt anymore, I mean, that would be great. And you could maybe break.
I appreciate that, Joel.
Yeah.
That's why we are a 4-man scramble. So, you know, although did we three putt versus you? I think we did. I think as a collective group, we took 12 whacks at one hole. Or was that? No, that was Pat Perez.
We did that against Perez. On par three, we had like a 40 footer and we three jacked as a team.
so bad.
That is painful. But yeah. I've been there.
Joel, I'm curious. So, you know, we did defeat you. I'm curious how frustrating it must be to play against us because of how bad we are collectively, yet how miraculously we seem to pull it out each time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with scrambles, right? You only need one good shot out of four, but realistically, like, you only need like one good shot out of like 12 on a par four. Like, even if you hit like an average drive, if somebody hits a great second shot inside of like 10 full feet, like you guys are probably going to make it. And if you, or, you know, let's say you guys hit a terrible tee or whatever it is, you have four chips around the green. Like, you're going to find a way to never make a bogey, especially where we played at Mesa. Unfortunately, I did not play well that day, but, I wish I could have gave you a better match, but out there, you guys just aren't going to really make a bogey. It'd be really hard to make a bogey out there, and you're going to make your six or seven birdies just by being four guys. But there's definitely times when I was like, all right, you guys are in trouble. I got a good look here. Like, I got them. And then all of a sudden, one of you yahoos makes a putt or hits a great second shot in there, and I'm demoralized once again.
It's a fun scene at Mesa. It's a very fun scene there. I feel like everybody that we met was very into the classic, like, club looking for games. They're inviting us to come back for some money games on, you know, Wednesdays and Fridays. I feel like that's your kind of club, and you're a perfect fit right there.
Yeah, Mesa's been incredible. I've been home. It's been my home for 3 or 4 years now, and just a great group of guys. I mean, we play sixums, eightsomes, drink beer, listen to music, have a great time. So it's no real different than, like, it is a country club, but it's pretty blue collar and it's pretty darn fun. It's not a desert golf course, so no one's looking for their balls all the time or chasing, you know, rattlesnakes through the bushes. So it's just a really fun atmosphere. The head pro, Scott Wright's an incredible guy. He's got to be one of the best pros in the country. And just a blue collar attitude out there of play fast, drink and listen to music and have fun. And I think that's, golf is way more fun when it's played like that.
I did like that we really didn't lose any balls, even when I snap hooked one over the guy came out of the clouds and just threw my ball back.
Watching the live stream, and he came across and he was on the other side of the canal, like bordering the golf course. It's like, Riggs, got your golf ball. Chuck it over. That was classic. That was awesome.
That was absurd.
You just can't lose a ball out there at Mesa. So talk me through, we got to talk about the, I don't know what you call it, 10 finger putter grip, baseball grip.
Oh yeah.
Whatever the hell it is. You start doing this right before, at least the first time I saw it, you were doing it right before you played us, like your downhill putts, you're playing with Steve Stricker and you're draining putts with this grip. You talk Frankie into it. Frankie, now I think that's the only way he putts, but where's this whole thing come from? What's the theory behind it?
I don't know how, I mean, I'm not a grill grinder, so if I'm on the practice green, like, I'll do my drills and stuff. But after that, I get bored pretty quickly. So messed around with it. I made a lot of putts, and then I used it in Mexico at Mayakoba on the weekend and did okay with it. And it's kind of just – it's off and on for me. I haven't, like completely stuck with it, but I used it yesterday and played okay. I think what it does is it allows me to release the putter better with the right hand. So it's going to be the right hand's going down the line. It's a more natural motion of like rolling a ball. And it takes my left wrist out of it. I get a weak left wrist and I struggle with speed, and actually had it on video a couple days ago and it looked pretty darn good. So it may be here to stay. I mean, anything I do putting wise changes week to week, but I think you may be seeing more of it, split-handed, Happy Gilmore, whatever you want to call it. But I actually had a new putter built that is a little longer, and the grip is 2 feet long, so I can like actually like grip all the way down on it. So it's a little, it's full go.
Yeah, it's a good grip, man. I mean, if there's something about it, feels more natural. It's almost like when you're like growing up as like a little kid and you're running around with that little hockey stick and you're just like smacking things into nets and stuff, like it feels more natural for a putting stroke to actually get your hand lower and smack a little ball into a hole, as opposed to like way up here and like the pendulum and the shoulders and keeping everything. That's so unnatural to me. So when you showed me that, I'm like, holy shit, like I can just line this up. It actually helped me with my vision more. I was able to like get over the ball more. Exactly. And kind of watch it go down the line.
Directly over the ball and not inside of it more. And so that's another thing that people have said. So I'd be curious if more people actually tried it, especially like your average Joe Schmo, like if they actually improved a little bit. So
yeah, totally.
Something to definitely look into. I mean, I'm not the first to, I know there's been several tour players that have done it, messed around. I know Natalie Golbus did it for a while in the LPGA, and there's some other ones, but seems to work okay for me.
Are you a tinkerer in general?
I don't tinker with clubs per se, and I guess putting would be the only thing I tinker with. I kind of try everything, and it's like, I call it honeymooning. I'll grab a new putter or I'll do something else, and like you go through a honeymoon phase with it and you make everything and you're like, oh, this is awesome. And then like the next week it doesn't work, so you try something else. I think maybe the best players in the world probably just stick to it. I didn't see Tiger changing with his putting in his career, so maybe I should just stick to one thing and figure it out. But for now, it's kind of flavor of the week for me with the putter. But I don't tinker as much else. I keep my clubs around for years and years, and I don't change too much else.
You're not like a big equipment junkie?
I don't know. I have like, there's like a metal stick with like a thing on the end of it, and they have different lofts and you swing it and it goes in the air most of the time. That's what I know about golf.
Didn't
clubs.
You, did I mishear you? Did you buy one of your clubs on like eBay or something?
Yeah, I was just going to
say. Yeah. Well, so I had a Ping Answer Hybrid from 2011 and I had it for 9 years. And this summer, like the face finally like cracked, and so I struggled. I tried different hybrids. I tried a 7-wood. Nothing worked. Finally, Gino, my caddy, had ordered a backup off of eBay before, but it just didn't quite work. So he bought two more this summer. I guess it would be like September. And one of them worked. It still has a pre-owned sticker on it. It's got the $40 price tag on it. And it is it's in great shape compared to my old one. So, and I've been playing, you know, for a couple months now. It's awesome.
Absolutely batshit crazy that a professional golfer, top 70 in the world, is out there with a pre-owned sticker from Golf Galaxy. To me, that's fucking an absolute joke. I mean, I don't know how that's possible. And I love it. I mean, for anyone that's listening that doesn't know Joel Damon and just heard that quote and now watches that video tonight, you have to now be like the top common man golfer on tour, like after tonight. It has to be.
I want to find the previous owner of that golf club. That would be where I have to get some info from Gino. to see if he could dial that one in, but it would be awesome. I'll have to send that guy a nice bottle of wine and a hat maybe for him.
Yeah, a little tip jar.
Yeah, that owner is thinking this club's going to end up in some fucking hack's hands who's going to be playing with the munis who can't break 110, and it's just on tour trying to win tournaments for a 64th ranked.
Yeah, I mean, it is, like, out of, for whatever reason, like, it has a regular flex in the shafts as well. Like, it's off the rack shaft. It's everything.
Come on, dude.
What? Yeah. So it's the only one that doesn't fit. Like, you know, I play like stiff shafts or extra stiff in the driver, whatever, like most people. And this one, for whatever reason, like, it's like a 5.5 and my iron shafts are 6.5s. And I don't know why. I can hit it 210 or I can hit it 230, and it just kind of works for me.
Unreal. Unreal.
Awesome. That is just, you know, like, from the average person, we're subject to that. We're almost forced into that, where it's like, this is the one club that I can have for 9 years, and it just, I can use it. But, like, you can have any club you want, and that's what you're rocking. What's
so funny to me, and maybe is what's fucking my brain up the most, is that, like, us hacks on this podcast are going through fittings and, like, getting clubs perfectly set to our, like, the gram of our, like, how, I mean, we're talking about, like, oh, this shaft is a gram too heavy. I mean, you're out there grabbing shit off racks and just going low. To me, that's like, what am I doing sitting here getting fitted? It's very, very funny.
In fairness, it is the only club that is, like,
but still
dialed in.
But
yeah. What it speaks to the talent level. It speaks to the talent gap that's between us four and Joel. That's the difference, I think.
If you give any tour pro, like, a driver that doesn't fit them, and, like, what, like, you know, like, you take one of your drivers, like, give them 10 swings on the range, they'll figure out how to hit it somewhat straight. Like, they can figure it out to do it. So, obviously, it won't be perfect, but if you know, the high-level players, you can kind of figure out how to use a golf club to get it around.
Do equipment companies, like, try to lobby you to, like, create or whip up or whoever you're using to, like, no, we can just make a club that's actually here in the present now, like, with modern technology? They have to be trying to do that too.
With the high, you know, like, Henrik Stenson was known for his three-wood ride. He had the Rocket three-wood that was super old and finally cracked on him, I think, this last year. But if it's not, like, a driver or a putter, like, equipment – people don't really care. I'm seeing, like, the driver's a big one. And so no one really bothers me about I've tried other hybrids. But nothing has worked quite like that one. So my par five scoring last year, I went from, like, top 50 on tour the previous year to this last year. I dropped down to, like, 150 because I couldn't get a hybrid that worked, you know, for that, like, kind of going for, you know, 230 to 250 club. And so I dropped completely down. And then this fall, with the new club back in play, I'm back in the top 50 on par five scoring.
That's phenomenal.
That $40 club is worth millions of dollars.
That is $1 million swing. Okay, it has to.
Right. Yeah.
Like, that's where you make your hay. It's par five. That's something.
Hey guys, it's Big Cat, and Fight Week is here. Rough and Rowdy 24 invades Clarksburg, West Virginia this Friday night, April 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern. For the first time since Rough and Rowdy won, every single fight will be a brand new brawler, and we found the wildest hillbillies the holler has to offer. Order now to enjoy 20 amateur matchups with no headgear, plus our live ring girl contest after the final bell. These country roads are being paved with blood and grit and balls. Join me and Dave on the call for Rough and Rowdy 24 tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. Witness all the chaos with pay-per-view replay available all weekend long on buyrnr.com. That's buyrnr.com.
I got to ask, so one of the biggest things that comes up when people look up Joel Damon, I got to ask what your current relationship is with Sung Kang.
It is amazing how the golf world doesn't like the C word. They don't like calling people cheaters. That's a no-no. Deservedly so, yeah. I mean, he did it to himself, and I just let the world know about it. So it kind of propelled me. I was just second year on tour as kind of a nobody, but the next week I had a lot of guys coming up to me. I had major champions, veterans, you know, pretty much everybody was, hey, that's really hard to do. Thanks for standing up for the game and protecting the field. And
right.
Since then, like, you hear more about it in the locker room, like, hey, yeah, I actually said you can't drop there. Or like, it's one of the hardest things in golf is like, where did the ball cross the hazard? Right. Like, if it's out of bounds, it's out of bounds. That's easy. But is it drawing? Is it fading? Did it actually cross? Like, that's a really hard one. And, you know, you try to do the best you can with you and your group to figure out, you know, what's the most fair thing. And I mean, with the physics and the way his ball was flying and how it worked out, I mean, there was no chance, and I had to make my stand.
So I've heard you speak about this a little bit. For anybody who doesn't know, give them the quick gist, and then I kind of want to put my two cents in, but give them the quick rundown of what happened.
Yeah, so it was Sunday in DC at TBC Avenel. We're both playing pretty well, and 10th hole is a par five. It goes straight out and it goes basically almost 90 degrees left, and it's all over water, most of it. And then the last 20 yards is obviously like the green in the run up area. But he went for the green in two. He pulled it a bit and it bounced up by the green. There's a spotter right next to it. The spotter said it landed right here. It didn't cross the hazard line up by the green. When we walked up, you know, he's about 230 yards out. So when I walked up there, like, you could tell the way that, like, it was like on a mountain, or I shouldn't say a mountain, but like a little hill. So if it kicked on towards the green, if it landed in on the red line, it would kick towards the green. If it didn't, it would kick in the hazard where it did. So multiple spotters up there said it didn't cross. He wanted to drop by the green. I didn't want him to drop up there, obviously. I said, you got to go back and hit it. And typically it takes a couple minutes to figure it out. This one took 25 minutes. We had Ben Crane and Ryan Palmer play through us. And then finally rules official came over and was like, you guys got to figure out. I'm like, I made my decision, like, whatever. So he ended up, the rules official, like, we can't do anything about it. He can do whatever he wants. Basically, he dropped by the green, he chipped it on, made his par, and ended up finishing third that week. So, somebody asked me on Twitter what happened on the 10th hole. And I told them that Kang took an illegal drop. And then I woke up the next morning and the world blew up.
You had notifications.
Yeah.
Well, you did tweet, Kang cheated. He took a bad drop from a hazard. I argued until I was blue. I lost. But what I was amazed by, like, obviously you did the right thing. There's a reason all the, you know, major champions, everybody on tour is coming up to you being like, yeah. And, you know, I heard you make a great point, which was that, like, look, if you said, you know, we all play golf all the time. Obviously, we're playing every week, and not everybody's on TV all the time. And, like, this shit does happen. But, like, if it's the difference between somebody finishing 54th and, like, 59th, it's not as big of a deal. It's like an $8,000, whatever. It's, like, not good, but it's less of a hat, whatever. Whereas this one, like you said, it's, like, hundreds of thousands of dollars of difference that he actually then cost the people – you know, that end up finishing behind him by a stroke or two that would have never, like, that by just taking an illegal drop. And what's amazing to me is, like, if someone ever comes up to you that's and says, like, no, that's not, like, you're always like, oh, okay, totally. And you err on the side of just making sure you don't violate any rules.
Right. Absolutely. Well, that's the deal. And you get a lot of times, maybe it's off a drive, right? And they're like, oh, it could be here. It could be here. It's like 10 yards difference. Maybe it doesn't matter a ton. This was like 230 yard difference. Like, you have to basically go replay the shot again. And that, you know, another one, like, if it's 10 yards here or there, like, that's like, who really knows, right? You know, we don't have like an overhead drone that tells where the ball is. So that's fine. But this one was just egregious and was just too much. And like you said, like, yeah, is it ever good? But are you more lenient? Probably when it's, you know, the guy's in 65th place and it's like within 10 yards, fine. Like, but also to your point, you always ask your playing partner, hey, is this drop okay? And if he's like, hey, I think it was back 10 yards, you just go back 10 yards. Like, yeah. there's no question about it. It's a group consistent. If you go with like the least favorable to you that the group decides, that's just how it works.
Right.
I even always thought that it was almost like you're playing competitors, almost decision, like final decision.
Yeah.
I didn't think that it was the, like, the current player who hit the bad shot could almost reward, like, with the area of drop. Like, I thought it was more almost in tennis where if you hit a shot and it's close, it's on the line or out, the competitor actually gets to make the call whether it's in and out. Like, sure. And And I thought it was similar to that vein of, well, you hit the bad shot. I'm saying, in fairness, like, no, it was back there based on where it's crossed. And that individual who hit the bad shot has to just take that penalty. So I'm kind of amazed that he was even able to be like, no, I'm going to drop up here. You're arguing. You're letting people play through. And it's like, well, my hands are tied because I don't have any proof of that. I'm not being a jackass. Like, this is my take on it. This is my honest take. You hit a bad shot. Like, I'm sorry, but you're back there.
Right.
And especially if other people, the rules officials, are saying, well, we didn't see a cross up here. Like, what are we doing here? It's like, I don't know, 5-1. That's crazy that that was allowed.
And that's where the rules of golf kind of let like a guy in my position, it let me down. And the rules official, his hands are tied because he didn't see, like, you know, he's two holes away when we radio him to come over.
Right.
Like, and it goes, it's like, hey, this comes down to your word versus his word. And we, if he, he basically can drop wherever he wants as long as he's willing to do it, I guess. So golf sucks, I guess, in that part, because it doesn't help me in it. You know, it doesn't help anybody. So my last words were, if you can sleep at night, then go ahead and drop it.
That's what you said that?
That was my last parting words from about 50 yards away.
This feels like the Maury show now, where we're like, and yeah, our next guest to bring in the room is some gang. And then just have you guys like battle it out.
That is a, like, everyone's a dagger, like, of a comment to finish it off with him. Like, that hurts.
Yeah. And everyone's like, hell, do you guys talk now? Like, whatever. I'm like, well, we never talked before. So, like, nothing's ever changed. Yeah. We didn't acknowledge each other, like, half the tour. You know, you don't know anybody. It's not like you're going to strike up a random conversation. So, it's fine. I mean, he's a good player. He won last year. There's no doubt that he's good at golf. But he might have a little blemish for a while.
Yeah. I love, if you can sleep at night with that drop, it hurts.
I like that you're willing to, like, step into confrontation. I wonder what you would have done on my plane the other day when this lady brought a dog and stuck her dog right under my foot and then told me to get to the back of the plane if I didn't like it. And I went to the back of the plane like a little bitch boy and just sat there.
I would have done the same, probably. Not a fan of confrontation. Like, if there's a solution like that, like, all right, I'll just get up and leave. But maybe if I had a couple drinks in the airport bar before boarding the plane. And it depends what type of dog it was.
Joel, it was an Aussie doodle. It was a huge dog.
This lady,
right. And I would have just sat there and hung out with the dog for however long the flight was.
Dude, it was all right, now I gotta tell the story. Even though
that's one of the takeaways. Frankie hates dogs.
By the way, guys, did you see the fucking American Airlines has banned, like, as we released that podcast, they've banned emotional support dogs on their planes.
Saw that.
What a fucking joke. So I'm sitting on this, we're cross-country flight, New York to San Diego, and I'm already tired. It's a late day. It was on the weekend. It was on Sunday. I had a long weekend. Sitting on this flight, I upgraded from the back of the plane to like an even more space seat on an aisle because I knew it was going to be a packed flight. I wanted nothing next to me. Whole flight gets filled, and the seat next to me is open. This lady comes walking in with this fucking Aussie doodle, huge dog, massive dog. And just goes, excuse me, I'm just right there. And I'm like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. No way. And I like dogs, dude. Like, dogs are awesome. And all the listeners are hearing this for the second time, but I have to tell you. And the dog comes, sits next to me, and she lets the dog go in my space. Like, the dog is on her right, never in the middle, just on the right, not in between her legs, just on my side, in between my legs. I now have my feet up on the seat. And she actually says to me, word for word, you wouldn't mind, after she realizes it, it's a problem. Like, the dog's not moving. I'm not moving. She goes, you wouldn't mind switching with my boyfriend, right? Like, he's somewhere else on the plane. I was like, well, you've given me no fucking choice. Like, what else am I supposed to do for the next 6 hours? Like, just sit up. Like, this is, I just, like, upgraded. I just spent like $170 to sit here. This is insane. So I get up and the fucking boyfriend's in a middle seat, in a worse seat than that was. So I just upgraded in the seat basically that I just paid from.
Well, now if I'm going back to a middle seat, I would have raised hell.
Exactly.
That's like, yeah, I would have done something to make sure I wasn't in a middle seat for sure. Oh,
it was a nightmare, dude. An absolute nightmare. I've gotten so many tweets since that podcast came out being like, man, like, no chance do I succumb to that. Like, honestly, like, I'd rather get, like, people were saying I'd rather get like dragged off that plane than like, just, I mean, she got everything she wanted.
Like, they didn't pay for extra, like, the boyfriend was in the back of the plane. They didn't, like, get too expensive seats. Now he's up there for free. It was a nightmare. Like, they just, yeah, you know, it was their plane. I was living in it.
I'm convinced that she threw a treat over by your seat, and the dog just went over there, and that's why he was over there.
Dude, you know what I thought? You know what I was thinking? How come she didn't fucking go back to the whoever that schmuck was sitting next to her boyfriend? Yeah. Why was that? Like, go to that other seat, right? Like, go sit next to, like, have that guy. That's the best solution for everyone. The dude in the back of the plane now gets to sit in a better seat with even more space because you brought this problem on the plane. So you go back there and you fucking sit next to your boyfriend next to the bathroom.
I'm glad. You're so triggered. This is awesome.
Amazing. You know, well, Frankie also thinks that,
you know, the
Frankie thinks that, like, they had a plan where they upgraded one seat, brought the dog on, like, maybe even Frankie even thinks so much that, like, they saw, like, oh, there's little baby Frankie. Like, we'll take that kid, and we see that he's in 9A. So let's buy 10B or 9B and sit right next to him with the dog, attack Frankie in every way possible, upgrade one seat, and then he'll move for sure, and we'll get one seat for free. He thinks it's so detailed. It's that detailed.
Well, Frankie, if you had a skinnier face, maybe people wouldn't be attacking you on planes.
Listen, man, I don't know what's going. I don't know what's happening. It's really it's been fucking quarantine. But I've noticed a real change, even in the last couple of weeks since, like, we saw you. Like, I feel like that Arizona trip, like, I ate like absolute shit on the way home. I ate like shit, and then this last couple of weeks, I've really been crushing the prosciutto and Italian meats, and it's just sitting in one spot right now. So I mean, it's sad that we've had these pros come on this podcast, and it started with Bryson DeChambeau being like, well, Frankie, maybe if I hit my wedges if you hit your wedges better, and now it's switched to, well, Frankie, maybe if you had a skinnier face. So 4 years have gone by, however many how long it's been, and I just haven't improved on anything.
I've definitely put on some LBs in the face. It's really scary when you look back 3 or 4 years ago and you like a picture with me and my wife, and I'm like, whoa, I don't feel that bad, but I definitely look worse.
Dude, there's a picture of when I like interviewed for Barstool like 4.5 years ago, and I'm wearing this, like, I don't know why I was wearing a lay. I think Caleb Presley was giving out lays.
It was Hawaiian Fridays.
Hawaiian Friday, and I was just sitting there with a nice collared shirt on, and I am 100 pounds. It's like I'm as thin as anything. And now you look at me and I'm probably like 120 pounds, but the 20 of it is just drooping fat around all the worst places you could possibly think of.
Great. There's a new neck workout you can do to really help the double chin and the cheeks and everything. It's good.
What is it?
You just keep fast like this for a long time.
There's no way, dude.
It's not an approved workout. Just end with a concussion.
That's just whiplash. I mean, that's just like they actually say not to do that at all. Oh, man.
Good for 10 minutes a day, Frankie. You lose a pound a day.
Just sitting there on the train, like, everyone's going to be like, what the fuck's going on over here?
I guarantee you, do that when you get on a plane, no one's going to sit next to you.
True.
You do that.
When I'm listening to, like, Slipknot.
You do that, you'll lose enough brain cells where you won't care about being fat anymore.
True. Oh, that's pretty good.
With golf season in full swing, Chevy wants to help you make the most of every drive, and the all-electric Blazer EV's bold design and dynamic performance make it the perfect electric vehicle to get you to the course in style and comfort. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
Joel, when are you playing again?
I'm going to start in Palm Springs. I'm not going to go to Sony this year. It seems like a long ways to go. Quarantine, the lockdown. They don't really want you, like, even going to the beach and stuff in Hawaii. So Palm Springs easy to drive to. You know, it's 4 hours from here. And then I just go to San Diego and I drive back here to Phoenix. So hop in and it's nice. I like to drive, you know, as much as we fly. It's kind of nice just to pile everything in the car. Like, and then you're done with the 2 weeks. You're like, I can't believe I just took all this crap. But, like, it's nice to, I mean, you know, throw a cooler in the back. Why? Because, I don't know, that's what your dad did growing up, so that's what you do now, kind of a thing. Just pile in the car and drive over. So that'll be nice. I haven't played Palm Springs in a couple years, but it's the same grass as here in Phoenix area, the Overseed. It's perfect weather most of the time. And golf courses are obviously pretty easy. You have to go low out there, but it's a good spot to start the year.
Yeah, I'm always interested in how much you guys focus on or think about the grass when you're choosing where to play. I think a lot of, like, the average fan wouldn't even think about that. You know, but like when I talk to, I have COVID, so I'm coughing a little bit. But when I have, like, Kisner, for example, like, doesn't go out west.
I don't know why I laughed. I'm sorry.
He just doesn't go out west because he hates, like, the grass out west.
Right.
It's interesting that certain grass features into your guys' choice to play in a tournament.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of the data out there now. You have the 15th club, or you got, you know, whatever, whoever you want to say. There's 10 plus people out there now doing stats on everything. And you can see, like, your putting differences. I think if you do, like, daily fantasy stuff, you know, you can see the rankings of if putt well in Bermuda or Poe or Bent or whatever it is. So me being a Northwest guy growing up on mostly Poe and Bent grass, like, that's what West Coast is, right? So that's what I prefer. And my stat, you know, I'm far better off those grasses. And so where Kiz grew up in the South, and, you know, he's a Bermuda guy through and through, and that's what he's good at. So you see that a lot. But there's also, like, there's another one where I've, you know, if you get enough years in, so this is starting my fifth year out here, I've played almost every tournament. You can see, like, what are your best events? Like, how does the course stack up for you? Whether it's a long course, short course, you know, whatever the grass is. So for me, preferably shorter and more narrow courses are better for me, but I've, you know, whatever that is. So it, and for me, at, you know, as a better, you get a guy like Kisner who's in all the WGCs, he's in all the majors. You have to, like, center your world around those. So now you have those big eight events, and then he's got, you know, probably five or six other big ones. You have the players in there. And so you've set up your schedule around the big events, and I'm not quite there. I'm like, if I have a solid start to this year or I play well this year, then I can start kind of gearing up for longer range stuff of, hey, I really want to play well at the majors this year. I, you know, really want to play well here or there. And you can start kind of setting up your schedule that way.
What's your ramp up to, you know, competing schedule or process or whatever you want to call it? What's that look like?
It's pretty limited probably compared to others, but, next week, my wife and I are going on vacation to Telluride with another couple. So instead of going to Hawaii, we're going to go to the mountains in Telluride. Going to go there for 4 days.
Where the hell is that?
Telluride is like Southwest Colorado.
Oh yeah. Honestly, when you said that, I thought another country.
Oh yeah,
well, never heard of Telluride.
The question no. That was, it was like you were upset at him. You were like,
no, I was like, that? Dude, like, no. It sounded super unique and, like, exotic. I was like, holy fuck, where the hell is that?
Yeah,
great ski town.
Best skiing in the country.
You a big skier?
I grew up doing a little bit of it. I shouldn't ski anymore. I don't want to break a wrist, tear an ACL. So I'm gonna be in the bottom, whatever. What do you want to call it? The pro shop, clubhouse, the bar. I'll be in the lodge drinking.
Spa day.
So that'll be fun. But
no, you don't ski because of your career.
Yeah, like I can get down a mountain just fine, but I know as soon as I get up there, I'm gonna want to, like, do what I used to do when I was younger. You know, like, let's go to a bigger run. Let's go, like, chase my wife through the trees, and all of a sudden I hit a tree, and then, like, it's just not like I went sledding in Jackson Hole. Like, that was pretty fun. I feel like that's safe. We did snowshoeing. Like, I did that. But I mean, for me, I'm out of practice, and if it's just not worth it for me to break a wrist or turn
an expensive action.
What's snowshoeing?
Where did you grow up, Frank?
I'm just a New York, like, Long Island. I don't know. I'm surrounded by water.
You know what a snowshoe is, yes?
You have to.
If you had,
I'm picturing a boot.
Hold on.
Oh, of course our outdoorsman has the snowshoe at his place,
dude. And I've gone snowboarding before. I've gone to Keystone, Colorado. Like, I actually can get down a mountain. I have no idea what snowshoeing is. I'm also like, I just don't know what I'm doing ever.
I gotta ask you, what's the enjoyment with snowshoeing? It looks so difficult.
Well, my wife chose that one. It's like hiking, but in snow, so it's really not that much.
Does it have, like, kind of like, almost looks like a tennis racket's underneath?
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, I've seen that then. Yeah. All right.
So it's really nice. So we went into, like, 3 foot powder basically, but you mostly stay on top of it.
Oh, can you actually slide and glide, like, in certain parts? Yeah.
So if you flip it, if you flip it the other side, yeah. So there's a metal thing to help you, like, go up the hills.
Oh.
But going down, you can kind of lift your toe up and kind of scoot down like some steeper hills.
That's pretty cool.
But it's basically hiking through the snow, which is reasonably fun if you like hiking and doing active things. I don't, but there's a lot of people that do. So it was fun to do it once, and we were in a cool area in the Grand Tetons there, but not something I have to do again.
He said, where are you from?
Well, you were like, Telluride, and then where the hell are you going? And then snowshoeing, what the hell is that?
Telluride for stuff. Sure, I thought was in, like, I don't know.
Snowshoeing's just too hard of a workout, honestly. If you go it's far, like,
I had so many
walking
layers.
Walking is hard. Yeah.
And I was sweating so much. Like, it's a real workout.
Yeah. That's like people that cross country ski. I don't get that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's weird.
It's like, really, like, run on
you
the
You can
beach.
Actually just go up to the top of the mountain. You can just ski down the, like, why would you ski on a flat part?
Right.
Dude, cross country skiing is awesome. What? So fun. So not like traditional cross country where you just go straight like this. The skate skiing is incredibly fun, and it's probably the riskiest skiing you can ever do. Like, if you go down a hill or something like that and you have to turn, there's no edges. So you have to do this like walk turn thing. And if you can't do that, you're going to hit a tree. You're in a mess of trouble.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So
what is skate?
So cross country skiing.
What are you talking about?
So skate skiing is a different type. It's cross country skiing, but it's a little bit different. In terms of the skis are a little bit
different.
I'm
going to hit my water bubbler in my room, by the way.
They don't have like grip on the bottom. So you're literally on flat locations. You are skating like you're playing ice hockey.
Okay.
Do you follow? So you can like – it's a hell of a workout, and it's really fun. But if you're going up and down hills, it becomes a hell of a workout.
I kind of visualize – I know what you're talking about with that turn. I've seen that in the Olympics.
I was going to say, the guy, they turn in the – then they, like, lay down, and then they shoot a couple things, and then they keep, like, going around again.
Yeah. You're not talking about those people that ski, and they do, like, a lunge every time they turn? Is that what you're talking about?
A lunge every time.
You know those kinds of skis?
No. Lunge every time. No, I don't know that one.
You know what I like in cross-country skiing?
Oh, no. That's telemarking. When that's downhill telemarking. Skate skiing is the same thing as cross country, but in turn, it's just like a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more athletic.
I like when skate skiing is everyone's in the same line and they're all using the same thing, and then one guy like goes off of it to make a move.
Yeah,
it's always like
they're drafting, and then all of a sudden he's like, "Screw you! I'm making my
yes,
yes,
yeah,
nice."
That is a hell of an actually event. That's one of what is that called when they shoot? Because when they miss one of the targets, they have to go around this loop for every miss that they do. What is that? It's a
really
great event.
Hours long, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it's a crazy endurance event.
What's more impressive, that or water polo?
That.
Good question.
I mean, anybody can
what
but if a guy's like attacking you when you have the ball, like that sucks because they basically drown you.
Dude, treading water for like, I don't know how long those matches are, but like that's the most impressive athletic feat in all of humanity. Like being able to stay above water, play a sport and have people like defend you. And like you said, like tack, like there's no handles anywhere.
I mean,
they're surviving. It's the only sport in which they are just surviving.
The goalie move, you know, the goalie move where they like nestle at the top and then
throw their hands up. Dude, like at every moment, they are just surviving from dying at every second. Like if they just stop playing the sport, they just go to the bottom of the pool.
I can't tell you how much I hate that take, Frankie, but I'll just let it go. There's so much to talk about.
I mean, unpack that. I mean, what don't you like about that take?
He goes unpack that.
Water polo is the, what'd you say? Is the
most
greatest
impressive athletic feat in all of humanity.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, come on, Joe. Like, think about that. Like, think about how hard it is to stay afloat in
There's
a pool.
There's a 3-year-old kid who can swim for 5 minutes, and you want a 25-year-old Olympian to, like, tread water for a while, and you say it's the most incredible feat ever?
Yes. Yes. It's something that I can't even wrap my head around. Like,
well,
I
here's a question that you have to ask Joel. Frankie, can you swim?
Yes, I could swim. Yeah, I can swim. Well,
I mean, I don't know if you
can. I got buoys around my nipples. I fucking float right to the top. I mean, come on, man.
Wow.
Boy.
Right around my neck. Yeah, now I can't wait for the summer to hit around. I'm just going to be sitting around with my, like a floaty.
He's just like a floaty.
like a beaver when you see him going through the creek, just like my face, just like. Oh man. Boy. Yeah, water polo. I would like some water polo people to slide in my DMs and tell me how hard it is. There's got to be some sort of like metric that shows that I'm correct, that they burn X amount of calories.
That's the big sport in the OC, right?
What?
In the OC, the show, the OC, wasn't that their big sport where all the cool guys played like water polo?
Oh, but it sounds like a cool sport that they play in the OC.
Wow.
I don't know.
I couldn't play water polo. I know that. But I also can't fucking ski, shoot things, and then cross country ski some more.
Can't do that either.
But that's like a skill.
Biathlon. The sport is biathlon, and Riggs, you would be horrible at it because it's cross country skiing and shooting all blended into one.
Oh, dude, you got your eyes fixed.
Yep, eyes are fixed. I'll say there's a big difference between skeet shooting and like target shooting.
Oh, I don't know.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's true. No,
there is.
You could be right. I just don't know.
I agree with that, Riggs.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you, Joel.
Moving target versus stationary. I agree with that.
Totally.
Joel, what's your biggest hobby?
Watching sports.
Okay.
Grilling. I don't know. Like, I love watching sports, like all sports. It's always been that way. And like, I like to sit on the couch, pet my dog and watch sports, I guess. But, I have a Traeger and a Green Egg, and I'm getting more into the grilling aspect and different type of meats out there and different ways to cook them. So that's been kind of fun.
Have you ever dove in? Is it dove in, dived in? What, I always get mixed up on that. Dove in. Dove into meat Twitter? Because it's a scary place.
I haven't done meat Twitter, but I've started following more like Traeger people or like more meat people on Instagram, I guess. And that's kind of interesting because they like show you how to do it on Instagram. They give you recipes. You know, they tell you some do's and don'ts, and that's kind of fun.
Well, my point too, yeah, but like if you ever tweeted out like, oh, like this is the meat you're cooking that day, you'll get people. Because like we always say there's different types of Twitter. Like golf Twitter is one of the worst Twitters in the world.
Right.
Oddly, drumming Twitter for me in my life has been a nightmare. Yeah. Like I'll put up a clip of me playing the drums and they are dissecting if I'm over. Like they actually set a metronome to it and tweeted out to me that I'm not playing in time. It's a nightmare. And then – they're crazy. But then meat Twitter may be the craziest of them all. We've watched our guy Glennie Balls tweet out just him slow cooking something, and they are going crazy. You didn't wrap it the right way. What are you setting it at? Don't lift it up to take a picture. That exposed oxygen. It's like you can't win with these people.
I'm glad that I will keep my meat off Twitter then.
Yes, good. That's a good rule of thumb.
That's a rule to live by. Keep your meat off Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Really fair.
Yeah, I mean, New Year's Eve, we were supposed to have a couple people over and it didn't work out, but I still had a 9-pound prime rib that I threw on week, but that one came out really good. Homemade bacon. I did that during quarantine. Big, that was fun. Like put it, I ended up smoking it for like 6 hours, but it came out really good.
You a crispy bacon guy or you like it a little chewy?
Well, I like it if you could get both, right? So you get a really fat side of the bacon that doesn't get – so then one side crisps and the other side's fat. Like, that's the
– Frankie's looking for an ally on eating burnt-ass bacon.
When I go to a place, I say burn it, act like you need to throw it out, leave it on for another second, then bring it to me.
Dude.
That's just horrible.
I also like burnt popcorn, homemade popcorn. Like, if the house is smoking and – your mom's running around fucking spraying fucking fire extinguisher. I'm like, I calmly walk up to the microwave and I just take it out, put it in my bowl. And I like the charred taste. I don't know. Maybe it says something about me.
Frankie, you described one of your buddies having to like paint that tree Yes, and he's a lunatic because he painted that tree and the tree.
I haven't told that story here. Hold on.
So you are hold on. You tell it, but you are the same person based on burnt bacon and burnt popcorn. You're the same. You're one and the same.
I know a guy that all my buddies, like whatever, they're all in the police force, and one of my friends was trying to join in, we have this story about there's a psych test which I undoubtedly would fail within minutes, but. It basically is like 2 hours long. They ask you all these things like, oh, draw a house, right? So if you draw a house and you put like smoke coming down the chimney, it's supposed to say something about you. Like all these people, like they have all these ways of like dictating and deciding your personality traits. But so one of my buddies, actually, they said draw a tree, and he drew a dead tree with just like crazy amounts of like fucking, branches and no leaves on it, just like a tree you would see in the middle like of the dark night in Salem, like Massachusetts, graveyard. Yeah, in a graveyard. And they're just like, you fail, like where are like the bushy trees, like where is the like the bird flying in, like where's the happiness here? And he's just like how is, when you think of tree, to draw that tree, it's just like a stunning fact.
Like big loop-de-loops and put like the trunk, and then
that's it.
Good.
The attention to detail with like a dead leaf like falling off. They're just like, they actually called more police in to take him out. Like they actually, it was that a pre-crime, I think they called.
He's got a darkness inside of him.
That's thing, actually.
Yeah. No.
All right, Joel. We probably kept you for long enough.
I mean, I have a lot to do today. I have to take out the trash, and I have to take some extra excess stuff to Goodwill. So big day for me.
Nice guy.
Wow.
That's I need huge. To get done in the next 7 hours. How long do you think it's going to take me?
7 hours.
Yeah,
probably 7 hours. when you pack for your trip, are you a pre-packer or you pack last second? You pack.
I'm a scramble packer. I feel like I'm a scramble anything. Like, you think at this point, like as much as I travel, like it's be a part of my life and I have a routine down and stuff. No, it's like, I still show up at events and like, oh, I didn't bring underwear this trip. Like, how the heck does this happen? Like, I'm a, you know, let's say that the flight leaves at 9 a.m. So I got to leave my house at 7. So I wake up at like 6:15 and like 10 minutes, throw all the crap in my bag, shower real quick and leave. And I'm like, well, I forgot my phone charger. I forgot this. I'm like, every week it's something. So you would think that I could like pre-pack a little bit, or maybe just leave, you know, like certain things in my suitcase and just always have them there. But that's not.
Still rocking the bucket.
Yeah, the bucket will be around, obviously, for mostly sunny weather, which hopefully we have on the West Coast. But I think you'll see the bucket. Yeah,
that's a pretty good career decision for that, to have like your thing be the bucket guy. I like that.
I wish I was that forward thinking. I wish it was like, I'm gonna wear this hat that no one else wears, and then I'm gonna play good golf, and then people are gonna like me. It was strictly like, I wore it all the time here in Scottsdale. Obviously it's always sunny here, and so it was, if you're out in the sun that much, I was just trying to protect myself a little bit. And I finally got the balls, I guess, or the ball to actually wear it and out on tour. And I wore it with Tiger Woods, and that's what happened. It blew up. And then I feel like, I kind of have something here. I should wear the bucket hat.
Did Tiger say anything about your bucket hat?
No, but his other 22,000 people following him certainly did.
Did Tiger say anything to you?
I mean, nice shot a couple times.
It's gotta feel good.
Building on something. Yeah, that's not nothing.
Definitely the one. He talked plenty. Like, I was asking all the questions, but he was more than willing to chat. So yeah, I mean, it was, well, I remember walking off the first tee, you know, there's a zoo, people everywhere. And I was like, this is the world you live in. He goes, this ain't nothing, bud. I was like, okay, never mind.
I just got the chills.
Yeah, me too.
Wow.
Where was it at?
What turn?
At DC. He was hosting that year. TPC Avenel, I think, is what that's called. We were both in the 10. He birdied 4, 5, 6, 7 in a row to get one back on Saturday, and the place was going nuts. It was pretty great.
How did you play? Were you able to keep your composure? Like,
yeah, I actually did okay. I shot 2 under. I think I shot 69 with him. He shot 68. Nice. Vegas line was +1.5 for me. So if you took me, I was down 3 to him, and I birdied 17, and he bogeyed 18, and won a lot of money. It was awesome.
That is awesome.
Was it was it like a goal of yours to try to beat him that day? I mean, it had to be.
Oh, I mean, I think after I got over like the shock and awe of a couple holes, and I like, well, the first hole, like it's like a hybrid or 3 wood, and I'm like, I'm teeing up driver because I'm so nervous. I want the biggest club I can to make sure this thing gets in the air. And I hit the longest drive of my life, like so far way down there. And I had like a little wedge in, and I could not, and I hit it like 40 feet long. I was so jacked up. Settled in kind of after that and did okay.
Is it like for someone like you, that's like whatever, like you're not playing in front of that many fucking play like fans as him. Was it like, could you imagine doing that every single time you step up to a golf course? Like, is that something you can get used to or no?
I don't know how you'd ever really get used to it, I guess. I know Rory made a comment. It's like, it's a one stroke penalty playing with him. Like, I don't know, but maybe more respect for Tiger and more respect for those top guys. They have to do it every single week. And it's like, I was mentally exhausted for an extended period of time. Like what you're like going, like you, your mind just never shuts off. Like you don't realize how much the adrenaline is rolling. Like you just, like, it's just vibrating through you. So when you finally come down like an hour later and you're home, like on the couch, and you're like at all, like you're just absolutely mentally exhausted. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine doing that all the time, but I think it's even more impressive when you play well, because if you're winning majors all the time or winning 5 or 6 times a year, like you did, what that does to you is it's indescribable. Like how the toll it takes on you mentally to do that week after week, it's way harder to be in contention week after week than it is to float around in 40th. So it gave me more appreciation for him and the top guys, because they're always playing in front of big fans and they're doing it week after week and they're playing at a high level. So it's harder than people could ever imagine.
Wow.
Did you feel like it almost like forced you to hone in and focus more than typical rounds?
Yeah. I mean, you can't take a play off per se, or whatever, you know, that you want to call it. Like, there's no taking a shot off. It's like all eyes are on you all the time, and you don't want to like screw up, basically, is what it comes down to. Where if I play in front of 3 people on a Thursday morning, like it's easy to kind of like fall, you know, just kind of go through the motions or whatever, not like have the energy going through. So, well, I mean, with that side of it's great. Like, it's great to have the fans maybe when you're not playing so well, but at the same time, like, it's really nice not to have them all the time.
It's kind of like us when we play with just like, when I play with my buddies who stink, or I play with my buddies who are really good, I tend to play a lot better with my buddies who are really good, because you're playing up to the competition as opposed to like them dragging you down. And like, exactly. When my buddies who stink are worse than me, you know, it's like bad golf. So like, it's a 6-hour round. No one even cares at that point. Like, why are we even at it? Let's just go to the bar. But when you play with your buddies, yeah.
No, that's a good point. I know. I mean, maybe for Tiger, like maybe he's kind of immune to it now, but I don't know. At the same time,
he actually said like he's been struggling during quarantine. During this whole thing, not having that, right? Or people have said that for him. Saying it's a disadvantage.
Yeah, Rory said it multiple times. He's like, every week feels the same out here. Like, the only difference in the major, like at the PGA or the US Open, is like there's just more tents. Like, the build out's bigger, like for all the production, but there's not anything different when you're out there on the 7th hole. Like, and maybe there's 2 extra people or something in a major, but it all feels the same. I know Graham McDowell called himself a golf zombie week after week. Because everything feels kind of the same, and you don't have, like, when you're playing well on the weekend, like, you, like, for a guy like me who plays mostly in front of not many people, like, it's a reward to play well as you get to play, or you get to play with the big guys. Like, it's really fun to play with big crowds. You know, like, Torrey Pines has great crowds. Phoenix, obviously, is one of the biggest and best. Riv is one of the best. And it sucks. You're not going to be able to have any of that. And the Florida events have great turnout. So, you know, hopefully we can all kind of get back coming soon. And that's one of the things, maybe, you know, I'm not quite ready to go back to golf yet. I'm having a fun time in my little off season here and hanging out and enjoying my White Claws.
to say it's actually you could use it to your advantage, though, is not have, like, you and Rory are on the same playing ground where he doesn't have that edge over you going into Sunday where he's used to the fucking crowds and whatever. Right. Like, you're just like, hey, you're in my territory now. Like, this right. is like that's actually pretty cool. Like,
it would, it's way easier for guys trying to win for the first time when there's yeah. not people. You know, yeah, absolutely. That's a good point.
Dude, it's yeah. weird watching old highlights and just seeing fans go crazy. Like, it's just weird. It's like a world I can't imagine. I'm like, get away from each other. That's dangerous.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, I think just after, like, around the new year, they, like, ran, the final round of every event last year. And so, you know, like, watching, I think I tuned in a couple on the West Coast, and it was like, oh, my God, that was awesome. And, like, you forget. You think it's like 5 years ago, the way that
we've
been doing this forever. So,
Dude, my phone was giving me like year in review photo, like whatever, it was Snapchat or your photos. And mm-hmm. I was like, man, like this year I was at Islander games jumping, like jumping on people at the Coliseum, like literally like I was floating, like crowd surfing. And like a month later, we're not allowed to see anyone. Like, it was just, I was like, that was this year. It feels like I was watching like a Maradona clip from like 30 years ago or something. Like, it was just craziness in the crowd. I'm like, there's no way that was now. That was 30 years ago. It's impossible.
With Maradona, did he have the hand of God? Is that him?
Yeah. Maradona put asses in the seats maybe more than anyone else in the entire. Have you ever watched that fucking documentary that was on like HBO? I think it was playing on like all the planes, like at one point, you know how like some things just go through rotation on all the airplanes.
Right.
Watch this fucking documentary. That, I mean, he was bigger than God walking around his home countries. And like when they went to games, what
was he from? Argentina.
Yes. And just like everywhere he went, like you walk out, it's, I mean, like we all watched The Last Dance with MJ, and every time he walked out of a hotel it was crazy, but Maradona was, the country was outside whatever hotel he was at. It was, he couldn't do wrong. It was awesome.
Is that how you say his name?
Maradona. I really hope so. I've said it 5 or 6 times here in the
last... it was Maradona. I could be wrong.
Is it Maradona? Is it Maradona? I don't know.
I didn't know who you were talking about, and then I figured it out.
Maradona. I feel like it's Maradona. Man, am I exposing myself.
I'm open to being wrong. I'm probably wrong.
I really only just watched the documentary.
This is what we do, Joel. We just spout shit that's not correct all the time.
It was pretty damn close, like regardless of what it is. It's just that...
You might be right. You might. You, for all I know, you're right.
Yeah. I didn't mean to nitpick you. I was just asking. I was
curious. You're picking some nits right now.
Okay.
By the way, Lurch did his thing where he DMs the Zoom group that he has to go to his real work job.
Joel's going throughout the trash. We've kept him for too long.
I think I watched Joel read Lurch's message in the Zoom call.
As he was talking.
Yes, he was talking about playing with... What's up, Joel?
I haven't read anything, but now my wife's calling.
Oh,
your wife's calling.
Send her a voicemail.
We should probably let you go then.
I think he took the call.
I think he'd probably have to when your wife calls.
Yeah.
Yeah, to all the listeners out there, Lurch did the thing where he thinks that we're on, like, you know.
I'm back.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. I'm surprised that technology worked. Usually, like, it hangs up the other call.
Yeah, I can't believe you figured that out.
Dude, I'm pretty tech savvy. No big deal.
Yeah, that was impressive. We were saying Lurch does this thing where he thinks that we're like ABC News or something, and that he can't just say to the show that, like, hey, I got to go. And so he sends these weird – he sent like a Zoom DM, which I've never – he's the only person I've ever met who does that.
He's very like cube life. It's really, really tough to be around. It brings us all down a little bit. Where he'll be like, hey, boys, like, gonna ping you later. Like, is that a call? Is that a text? Is it? He said, like, at one point, like, I'm sending a note to this guy. And I was like, what is that? And he's like, oh, a DM on Instagram. Like, that's not considered a note.
No, it's considered.
It's just like he talks like in office jargon.
Like, at least Riggs and I, got into this business to leave that business and not ever talk like that ever again. And then we Lurch has he brought him into the fold, and he's great. I love Lurch, but he says those words, and it takes me right back to sitting in those cubicles and getting those emails that made me want to run out of the building like it was on fire.
At some point, he's going to drop TPS reports, and we're just gonna fucking lose it. The whole place is just going to shut down.
He'll text us and be like, how about we just circle back on this later in the week? And it's like, you know what? Why don't you shut the fuck up and never use that jargon ever again?
We also do this thing where we talk about whoever leaves the podcast early, we just talk shit about them because they can't defend themselves.
Yes.
But we will then tell Lurch that we talk shit about him to his face, which has always been my defense against talking shit.
Yeah.
I'll let you know I talk shit about you so that That's you fair. Now can go back and listen to it.
This is basically to his face, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of like we're kind of like the lunch table in high school. And it's like the minute when you
hundreds of thousands of people talking, listening to us talk shit about someone instead of the five people.
Yeah, it's pretty pathetic.
That's a good analogy. I like that one.
Thank you. Okay. I guess we'll let you go. I mean, I tried this already. It didn't work.
Is this where you talk shit about me when I leave?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
When that video comes out on YouTube, are you going to watch it?
I have a viewing party. Everyone's got COVID. I have about 50 people over. Going to put it all the TVs around the house.
How long? Man. It's going to be long. It's going to be a long – those usually take – I don't know. I'd say it's over an hour.
Holy cow. Does anybody actually watch it?
Yeah, man. They watch the shit out of it. Dude, the kids one has way over a million views. I mean, we just did the one with Paige Sporanek. That's at 300,000. Like, I mean, we're going to be putting them out like crazy. So I think people are eager – or no, it's not the word, Frankie. They're – let me think about this one. It's they're craving, I guess, they're craving it more. They're craving more four-man scrambles. What are you making that face, Trent?
Anticipating?
I don't know. You know?
It's getting real red right now.
No, that's just the saturation. Look, that's my I can see? It's like a black and white, you know. Or I can do, I'm going to do the joke, Trent. I'm so mad.
This is what we deal with, man.
All right.
This is the podcast. This is the podcast.
It's audio, so none of that even mattered.
Yeah, we put it on YouTube.
Oh, good place to go subscribe. Joel, subscribe to our YouTube page.
You have to have a YouTube login?
Yep.
That's your Gmail. You have a Gmail or something or some sort of email. Yeah, right. Log in. Hey, maybe join the live chat tomorrow. That's a fun little thing for the people listening. I don't want to pin you down to that, but if you have a minute or something, maybe hop in there.
What time are you releasing it? Why don't you guys
boy, 8 p.m. That's 8 p.m. Eastern.
That's 6 here. All right, I'll be pretty intoxicated. It could get fun.
That would be fun, yeah. And you could talk through something. The chat gets lively. People go crazy for the chat. So, it's like a live viewing party.
Do you chat on YouTube?
Yeah. It's a live viewing. It's a premiere. So, like, there's a countdown. It's like 10, 9. Everyone goes fucking crazy. We all take our clothes off. And then the video comes on and the chat goes crazy. So, like, everything we watch, it's almost like watching a regular show live. We all chat about it.
That's awesome. Well, I'll – shoot me a message tomorrow. And
we'll ping you. We'll ping you tomorrow.
Yeah, or send a note, or maybe we can circle back to that tomorrow afternoon, right?
Okay.
Yep. That's exactly right.
All right, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers, fellas. Enjoyed it. Have a good day, and we'll chat tomorrow.
Yeah.
See you in the trash out.
Perfect. See you guys.
Yeah.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago. Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.